Very good morning. If you've just joined us, we are talking about the weather. That's what we started off with. We've been noticing some quite strange weather for us here for the time of year. And then we've been talking about the environment and how do we connect to our environment and climate change. And Samaneh Shaheen is always by my side, cross-cultural psychologist. And it's been fascinating, Samaneh, as we've explored how individuals from different cultures can react or connect to their environment.
Yes, and how that changes in accordance to time, place, history. My father always tells me fascinating stories about seasons and how before they waited for particular fruits to come into season and they enjoyed it in a particular point in time. Now, with changes, technological advances, we're able to manipulate and control the environment much more. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't turn our heads or turn our attention away from things that need attention. So the pro-environmental behaviors in order to help and facilitate that sort of development and awareness about the environment.
Yeah, we were asking earlier about making a difference. Somebody texted in saying, actually, we can't make a difference and the individual cannot make a difference. Well, we'll see about that in the next half an hour. Welcome back our guest, Khalid Khalifa, who's a professional aid worker and head of the Gulf Office based here with the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs. And joining us on the line is Simon Geer from South Africa. He's an environmentalist and he has his book Going Green. He also talks a lot about climate change and what a difference people, the individual, can make. He also can contribute on natural disasters. So it's a great pleasure to welcome you to the show, Simon. Hello there in South Africa.
Well, very good morning to you guys. It's an absolute pleasure to be live in Dubai. I don't think I've ever spoken to Dubai.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Whereabouts are you, Simon?
I'm in Johannesburg, where it is an absolute peach of a day. Lovely, sunny, late summer weather down here in the Southern Hemisphere.
Fantastic. Well, it's a real pleasure to have you on the line. So, yeah, Simon, we've been talking and with Khalid, at the moment we're on the topic of natural disasters. And, you know, for you, Khalid, you're coming from the humanitarian approach, but also how we connect with the environment. And I was saying to you just before the break, Khalid, you know, do you find that you've connected more with the environment as you have been on your life's journey as an aid worker, or is it different? Has it always been there?
I think it helped me connect more with the environment. When you go to places where there are major droughts, for example, like in Somalia, we are expecting another wave of hunger in the Sahel countries, and we've been sounding the alarm for months now, asking people to watch out and to try to prepare for responding and help before a famine occurs in the Sahel. And then you go home and you feel that you have everything at home. Your children are not aware how much food they waste. They do not sometimes care about recycling, and it really connects you more. When you go back, you can feel that you can make a difference at your own level and at the level of your family. And if everybody does that, I think collectively, probably we can make a difference.
Bring about a lot of change, yeah. Couldn't we? Yes, because it's important to, before the break, we were talking about debriefing. So kind of coming to terms with what we have seen and what we have experienced, especially you as aid workers. But it's also important to go away with the lessons learned. And sometimes the things that you may have learned may not have been experienced by people who are back home. So is this something that you try to inculturate and socialize into your own family so that they're able to see through your eyes?
I tried to do it with my own family. I tried to do it through training courses that we organize to aid workers, university students. Sometimes we go to schools to speak to school children about disasters, and that even if you are living in a safe environment,
yes,
where you do not feel the pinch of climate change, for example, or
right,
the pinch of environmental changes, this is not the case across the world. There are people who do not have enough to eat, and there are people who are suffering because of weather conditions.
Simon, you're there. I lost you there for a moment. You're back with us?
Yes.
Hey,
yes,
there, Simon. So, Simon, tell me about your work and how you got involved with the environment and, yeah, really sort of when you first became aware of what was happening in the world.
I suppose, you know, I grew up the son of a geography teacher, and so this was just something that was fed to me from a very, very early age. I mean, I didn't realize that there was such a thing as a particularly green household or a green way of living. You know, it was just what I've always known. And that led naturally to a degree in environmental science and a career as a professional scientist, but also as a member of the media covering these sort of issues. And what I've found is that if you are going to spend your life as a scientist, you almost automatically become an environmental scientist at some sort of a level, because even just looking dispassionately at a human population and the sort of pressures that act on that population, the environmental signal comes out all the time. And so these days, my interest is probably leaning far closer to economics and the sort of signal that we see being sent into our economies by the environment and by environmental change. And, you know, we're seeing things like peaks in food prices and peaks in metal prices and in oil price based on the increased difficulty that we have in accessing those resources because of environmental change and just because of the gradual depletion of them. And so I've just found that being someone who's interested in the world naturally leads to being someone who's interested in the environment.
That's very interesting. Interested in the world and hence interested in the environment. And Khalid is nodding alongside you. From a psychological point of view, and so much of what we talk about on Voices of Diversity is how culturally it makes a difference. And, you know, depending where you come from or the experiences you've had, you will approach an area differently to the next person. So that makes me think of where you're living in the world, Simon, and in South Africa. Culturally, I've been to South Africa. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. It's had its problems, but the environment, such a stunning environment. And I found the people that I met there were very connected with their environment because it is so stunning and beautiful. Do you think that people in South Africa are acting responsibly when it comes to the environment? Do you think that if you put it on the global stage, do you think that in South Africa people are quite advanced in their awareness?
I think we are and we aren't. South Africa always is quick to boast that we have phenomenal environmental legislation. You know, we really have a great constitution and laws that are comparable with the best in the world in terms of their sophistication with the way that they deal with environmental issues. But with everything, with a developing nation, how those laws are applied are quite different to just having them on the books. And so we have to really carefully balance our need for cheap energy and for a desire to develop our population with the broader need to sustain our environment over time. And so we have a situation where I think we rank amongst some of the dirtiest economies in the world as far as the way we create electricity. We're over 90% coal-fired electricity in South Africa, and a lot of those coal-fired power stations are quite old and quite inefficient. That is really just driven by the fact that we have a lot of very, very cheap coal. And so the environmental impact, the immediate environmental impact of digging that stuff out of the ground and then subsequently burning it in our big electricity producing areas is enormous. That said, we also are blessed to have areas that have been set aside for, you know, well over 100 years now to be preserved, like the Kruger National Park and like the Cape Floral Kingdom around Cape Town. And certainly the country's commitment to keep those areas preserved and protected is very strong indeed.
So for each of you, for Khalid, for you, Simon, if there was a message you wanted to give to the individual, because for one person living in Dubai, hearing about that in South Africa, they may be thinking, well, that's South Africa, that's not relevant to me. Somebody hearing about a natural disaster in the Sudan or in the Philippines will say, well, that's over there, that doesn't relate to me, I'm not going to make a difference. So from both of your perspectives, what would you like to say to those kind of comments? Start with you, Simon.
I always tell people, and particularly government departments, when they want to set up things like climate change response strategies, that the first thing to do is to do your day job properly. Because environmental change is going to highlight any weaknesses that are currently in the system. So if you've got a company or a country that is operating ineffectually or inefficiently, environmental change is going to highlight those weaknesses. And so it is so important, no matter what role of government or what role you are in a company, to do that job properly. For example, the way to get a population in South Africa to be more efficient, particularly a poorer population that is living in state housing, is to make sure that that state house is properly insulated and has a solar geyser and all of those things. All of those things are human dignity issues. They're not necessarily environmental issues, but they have massive environmental impacts. Similarly with education, we know that we need more research scientists and more engineers and people who are really qualified to optimize our economies and the way that we produce energy. The way to do that is not to pour massive amounts of money into PhD programs. The way to do that is to make sure that your grades 1 and 2 are learning to read and write properly and to just do those basics properly. And so I'm loath to see people separating environmental problems from other problems. They really are all one and the same thing. And we don't need additional and extra and clever plans. We just need to do the plans that we've already, or carry out the plans that we already have properly.
And for you, Khaled, what would you like to say?
I would remind the listeners and everybody who's, again, living in a place that is not feeling the environmental changes that we are not living in isolated islands. And what happens in other parts of the world, one way or the other, will affect us. We remember the volcanic eruption in 2010 in Iceland, and how this disrupted the movement of aviation around the world, including here in Emirates. When Gonu cyclone happened in Oman in 2007, like a dozen ships were destroyed in Al Fujairah here in UAE, and some of the roads were cut. The floods in Pakistan affected the business here in UAE. We are not living in an isolated island anymore. And if we do not do our bit here, and everybody in their part of the world does their bit, I think everybody around the world will feel it.
Simon, you all right to hold on there on the line while we just go to a quick break?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you stay where you are. And Khaled, you can stay with us a little while longer. We've got some questions coming in on the text message, so I'd like to run those by you. So do stay with us.